Hello and welcome to Torchbearers. My name is Gerald White. I'm a father, an educator, and a weekend athlete. Torchbearers is a space where I can talk to people that have opinions about the current situation within our society. Through this space, we talk about race in relation to government, social interaction, and our personal lives. I'm hoping that the information and ideas that my guests share can give you a different perspective on the current situation that is happening.
Today, my guest is Amy. Amy and I talk about race as she was growing up in high school, as well as what she hopes for her family and her children. I hope you enjoy what perspectives Amy has to offer, and please leave us some feedback. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
So welcome to another podcast of Torchbearers. My name is Gerald White, and with me today, I have Miss Amy. Would you mind introducing yourself to our audience, please?
Yeah, my name is Amy, and I'm a mom. I got two kids. I work for an electronics company, and I don't know, and I'm like getting older.
Yes, I think we're all getting older. And as we get right into it, I asked you to come here just to talk about things that are happening in the world today. I know some of the things that are going on, you may have some opinions about it, some thoughts, and just, I guess we'll start off with just the last few weeks. The killing of George Floyd, the police officers, and those kinds of things. We'll kind of put that in the backdrop of having this conversation, but also in the last 3 to 4 years in the backdrop as well. So before we hit that, we're gonna talk about where you grew up and how your understanding of race came to be, how you formed it so far.
So I grew up on the west side of Manchester in New Hampshire, which was really, white middle class area on a little dead end street with a lot of kids. So actually a lot of great memories of playing hide and go seek and having fun and really kind of that classic, I guess, upbringing that people kind of picture. Honestly, since I knew I was coming on the show, it's made me think a lot about my own history. And really how I've grown up and opinions have been formed and things I've been exposed to or haven't been exposed to. I never really thought about race probably till high school. Like it wasn't something that was ever talked about or in a good way or a negative way or I don't know, anyway. And I mean, it's funny because the first experience I have with even acknowledging anything was when I was really little. And I remember this because it was such an impression on me. We had family over, and a cousin who was the same age as me, so we were probably 6 or 7, actually told me a joke. And it was a racist joke, and I didn't even know what it meant. Like, it didn't even, right over my head. Mm. And I laughed because I didn't know what it meant, and it was supposed to be funny. And then I went later, and I told my dad this joke, and he laughed. And then he goes, "You shouldn't tell that joke." And I go, "Why?" Like, I had no, like, to me it was like a knock-knock, who's there kind of joke, whatever. But it stuck with me, like, forever, because it was probably the first time I ever even thought about any differences in people, at all.
So when he said, "Don't tell that joke," did he expand on it?
Or no.
I was just, "Don't tell that joke"?
Don't tell that joke. There was no reasoning behind it. There was no explanation. It was just, it was like saying a potty word without, don't say that word. But even as a kid, you're not sure what constitutes a potty word, right? So you don't know. And then, probably later on, in high school. So in high school, it was a pretty big school, and there was a lot more people coming from different areas of the city. So just because of that, there's different people there. There's more diversity all around you. I think that's when, like, I started to actually meet other people of color. I remember the girl in homeroom, Clara, who was, like, the sweetest person. She was just probably the first person I ever even sat down with and had a real conversation with. And not really thinking of it, not on purpose, but just no exposure whatsoever. That makes me, like, woefully underqualified to even talk about a lot of it, right? Because I was just in this naive bubble for so long. And then meeting people from, like, India through high school, and meeting people from all these different backgrounds. And then I was, like, intrigued because they were so different. Everybody was so different, which I thought was awesome. And I went to people's houses and, like, met their parents who, like, gave me weird things to drink. And, like, but we're so friendly and sweet and kind and just, I don't know, like, I think you're brought up to kind of fear what you don't know. Mm. And then when you start to know, you're like, oh, these people are really, really nice. So that's where that happened. And then I went to college. You know, I went to Roger Williams. And it was not a very diverse campus. To be honest, it was, again, it still wasn't something I thought about. I went to Roger Williams College because they had my major and the campus was beautiful. Those were, like, my big...
Those are good reasons to go to college, right?
At that age, like, that's where my thought process was as far as that went. Honestly, I was more into trying to find myself spiritually and trying to figure out where I fit into the world as opposed to looking outside myself and seeing what was outside of the world. But because of that, I ended up joining some clubs in college. One of them was, like, a spiritual club, and we went to, like a temple for, like, Hare Krishnas and, like, participated in a whole event that they had there. And I got exposed to, like, different people and different religions and
That's
different things.
Cool.
It was not what I ever thought it would be. So you grow up hearing, like, about Hare Krishnas, and you think about the people at the airport who, like, are trying to hand you stuff. Or you think all these, like, movie stuff.
Oh, like from Airplane?
Yeah. Like, you think about that. But it was nothing like that. They were just, like, these awesome people who let us partake in this whole ritual that they had, this whole, like, event, which was filled with, like, singing and dancing and laughter and music, and it was awesome. It was awesome.
That's
so
pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, so whatever. Then, so you get more exposure, I guess. But then I come back to New Hampshire, and it's still New Hampshire. There's still not a lot of diversity in Manchester, New Hampshire. And then my parents moved out to Auburn while I was at college, and there's, like, no diversity out there whatsoever. And still, honestly, I didn't think about it then as much as I think about it now. I mean, I have children that go to school there, and I want them to have diversity in their lives more than I did. You know, we live there because they have a good school system.
So why do you think that's important for you to have diversity in your children's lives as of right now?
Because I think that it's important to know that the world is bigger than just your little space. And I think it's important to for them to know that, you know, there's so much out there in the world that we at this point are just not have not been exposed to, at least not my family. And I try to teach them to be accepting of people, of who they are, all people. Like, and I my daughter is little. She talks about one of her classmates who has two moms. Not in a negative way. She just brings, hey, you know, she's got two moms. And when she talks about that, we talk about how, you know, there are different families in the world. And there's moms and dads, and some have two moms, some have two dads, some have single parents, blah, blah, blah. So we talk about all these different things because I want her to think of them in a positive way. And I talked with my son about that kind of stuff too. You know, he is much more advanced than I was at his age as far as thinking about the world outside of where he's at. At least I think he is. right? You know him. And he still has a lot to learn, just like I do, just like, you know, I think everybody does. But one of the things that I think, you know, honestly, that I think my children benefit from is knowing you and knowing this family, because they are exposed to things that I was never exposed to. It makes them have to think. I mean, so, you know, Skylar has walked around, hasn't done it in a while, but when she was little, she would walk around and see, like, a black man and be like, it's Uncle Gerald. Now, you know, and I'd be like, oh, it's not Uncle. I always turned around like, it is. Oh, no, it's not Uncle Gerald. And, you know, she, you know, but she's like, but it looks like Uncle Gerald. And it's okay for her to notice that. Like, she's just noticing the world. I don't want, you know, but I want her to, you know, I mean, she loves her Uncle Gerald. So that's good. I want her to see that and think of love and think of, you know, the world around her as bigger than just, I don't know, the little space that we occupy.
Mm. So how do you look at that, what you're trying to teach your children now, and put it into the space that we're currently in, especially in the last month and some change, you know?
Yeah. So a lot of conversation has come up with my son, who's older, you know, who's going to be going to college next year. He's watched a lot of videos. We've talked a lot about, honestly, about posts on Facebook. That's a big one that comes up. You know, family members who post things that we don't agree with necessarily, and he gets really emotional about it. He gets really upset because his, you know, he just doesn't understand how people can think certain ways, right? And so we talk a lot about how, you know, he wants to change the world. This is what he talks about. He's been saying it since he was little.
All the time.
Right? Since forever. So what we talk about is how do you communicate with those people on a level that will allow them to open up to be able to see what you're talking about, right? What do you stand for? I ask him that a lot. I also ask him to do a lot of research when he comes at me with, like, this person posted this thing and they're wrong. And I'm like, well, why? And I want him to keep questioning those things. But, you know, if you want to change the world, I feel like you can't just tell people they're wrong. You need to be able to, get on the level with them where they're willing to even listen at all. And that is, like, the difficult task that he probably doesn't realize he's setting before him if he really wants to make these changes. Most people don't listen anymore. And especially even when it's your family, right? Even if you love your family and you don't agree with them, when you try to talk to them, it turns into this, like, crazy heated discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to stay calm. You have to be able to, I don't know, you need to be able to connect, whether you agree or not, to be able to get them to listen to you. So for him, that's what we talk a lot about. It's a lot of very deep, complicated, like, me trying to get him to see outside the age that he is to see the bigger picture, which is really hard. And then for her, actually one of the things that I started noticing, we're all big, big readers in my house. Well, three out of four are. And that's okay, right? But one of the things, and I was thinking about this a while ago, but is that, you know, being like that, being readers and reading books every night, we don't have a lot of diversity in our house as far as books and what it represents. You know, a lot of them, they might have boys, girls, whatever, they have monsters, they have whatever, but we don't have anything specifically talking about color at all. So I went out and bought some books. There are ones that Niall posted. I went and checked them out. They're like, I was like, oh, these are pretty cool. So it's a start. So we were reading one of the books, what is it called? The Night Is Yours. It's this little girl, and she's playing with all these other kids in the neighborhood and whatever. And they do this thing where you pick, like, you know, who's it for hide and go seek. And the, in the scene, in the page, it's like awesome because they have all the hands in it. They're all different colors. And so when we got to that page, I was just like, what do you see here? And so she's pointing out all the, like, she's, it was funny because she's like, oh, they're all different colors. And she's kind of like pointing and talking about them. And, she, and you know, she's like, this is my favorite one. And I'm like, why? And I just asked, and she was like, her answer was something funny, like the shape of the fingers or something. Mm. It was just not, like, kids just don't think like we do, right? You don't know why they pick something, and it's hardly ever what you think it's going to be. But for her, that's like the start of the conversation, I think, because she does not have a lot of any diversity in Auburn. I will say where she goes to school now, the owner's grandson, you know, he's the only person of color in the whole place. He's the sweetest little kid, and I'm like, there's just him, and then there's everybody else. And I probably, a couple years ago, maybe now more than a couple, but I would have never even noticed, like, thought about it at all. But now I think it's a good thing, you know, that Max is there. Not just for her, but for all those kids.
It is a good thing to be exposed, like you said, to different people, because it opens up your view of what's happening in your world and different foods and ideas and opinions and whatnot. And having that conversation with a 6-year-old is completely different than having it with an 18-year-old, you know?
Who thinks they know how to fix the world, by the way?
yeah, of course. So it's one of those things where you're looking at the situation and having the same conversation, but in different fashion and in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the things you mentioned was, you know, your Facebook and talking to people on Facebook. And I think the problem that I see, especially with Facebook, is that there's a lot of caption, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just a single caption that just inflames a bunch of people, and it's just something small, but it's not the totality of the whole thing. And it comes up, and all of a sudden you're like, wait, I've taken a side already, this other person's taken a side, and now we're arguing about something that's just a tiny bit of a fraction of what maybe somebody, you know, the entirety of their speech may have been about. So I know for your son, he has these really tricky and funny things that he's been posting, and sarcasm that he's been posting on other people's threads and whatnot. Has that ever become a thing on Facebook, on the internet, or in your household?
Like a fight between him and somebody else?
Yeah, but
not that I know of. I can say he's never come back to me and said that there was like a fight to, you know, or some back and forth. I have had that happen with myself, though, which is one of the reasons why I'm really not on Facebook that much, because it became this thing where I was constantly feeling this need to, I don't know, post comments to people that honestly weren't interested in hearing what I had to say. Most people just want to throw their thing out there and whatever. That's the way I feel about it anyway. They don't really care about your opinion or my opinion. They're just posting their own opinion. And I've even had people that I read, they're like, I don't want any responses on this, but I'm just going to post this. And they go off on this thing. And I'm like, but you're on a public platform where you're posting to all these people this very strong opinion. People are going to respond. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that you're saying I don't want responses is kind of, like, you're not in the right platform for that. You need to do that, like, in the privacy of your living room with your close friends. That's not
it. All journal.
Or journal, yeah. Do it in your journal, and it's fine. I don't go on very often because I have a really hard time. I do a lot of writing and deleting and, like, don't sending. I actually had someone in my family just post something that I did respond to. It's the first time I responded to anything in a long time because I was really upset and I couldn't stop thinking about it. Like, it just wouldn't get past my brain. And so I was like, okay. And I responded, and I haven't been back on. I can't get caught up in that again because it's not a happy thing.
There you go. So, in moving forward with the last month or so, how has any of those, outside of having the conversation with your children, impacted you personally?
So, honestly, like, for me, it's been kind of crazy. Like, I find myself thinking a lot about, I don't know, about things I just don't know anything about, right? Like, there's just so much that I can't relate to, that I have had nothing or any experience with, you know. And so I'm listening to not just your podcast, but I find myself listening to them constantly with different people, trying to see different opinions to kind of understand. I want to understand, right? So when I see things like looting, I get upset because it's looting and people are getting hurt. And I'm just like, this is horrible. But then instead of just going, this is horrible, and walking away, I'm trying to find things, not that make it okay, but trying to understand beyond myself, like why somebody would feel so angry that they would have to do that, or they would feel like they would have to do that, or feel like that's okay. Because for me to do something like that, I would have to be, I can't even imagine how upset I would be. It would have to be personal, and it would have to be hurting me to the point where I just don't care anymore about your damn TV sitting in your store, right? Like, yeah. I don't care. Like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm going to, and I'm just doing it to hurt somebody because I've been hurt so bad.
So somebody said this thing the about a week ago, and I haven't been, I forget who said it to me, and they were saying that when people are upset, the first thing they look around, you know, people are arguing about the fact that people are burning on their own community, burning on their own things that they're going to have to use, right? So when you're upset, pissed off, or whatever, something negative, something bad happens to you, and it's emotional, when you're in your home, what are some things that you do when you're upset? You know, some people take a frying pan and toss it to the ground, and they're breaking something within their own home.
Yeah.
In the end, they'll clean it up.
Yeah.
Fix it, because at that moment in time, they were upset.
Yeah.
The emotions got taken. And I've never said that to anybody, I guess I'm saying it now, but somebody said that to me, and I was like, oh yeah, that does make sense. You know, like, you have guys that are so upset, or girls that are so upset, people that are so upset that they're mad about something, and then they punch the wall. You know, we know family members that have done that, right?
I've done it.
Punched the wall and broken their hand.
I haven't done it in a really long time, but when I was a teenager, that was something I used to do when I was mad, so I totally get it.
Yeah, so you're that upset and you do something that's beyond you, right?
Yeah.
And again, you can't, and I think I said this to somebody the other day, you don't excuse the fact that people did something and harm other people's businesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the concern for me is that we're focusing more on the people. Some people, we're focusing more on the looting versus what caused the looting.
The why.
Right?
It's the why.
Yeah. And I think that's...
Yeah. So that's what I think for me is the question. And to be fair, I'm asking the question on the other side too, right? So I'm asking the question of why is it that people, you know, white people are literally acting like all of their rights are being taken away. Like, I just saw that posted, and I was just like, that's crazy. But in my mind, that's crazy. But to some, and it was this huge post, and in that post, in these comments, where people write on, yeah, you're right, blah, 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 on and on. That was the post that got me really, really upset. And at the end of it, it was just like, it's not, what was the last thing it said? Something about, it's not illegal to be white yet. That's what it was. The whole thing just enraged me. It was very long. And
you read the entirety of it.
I read the whole thing.
There you go.
I did. Of course I did. Because even though it made me mad, I should still read it.
Okay.
Right? Like, I'm not going to agree with everything I read or hear or whatever, but that doesn't mean I should just walk away and not read it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you know, at first I was just so flaming mad. And then at the end, after a while of cooling off and still thinking on it. Then I started calming down to be like, why? Why would you think that? Why would you feel so, like, attacked? That's really what it is. It's like they feel like they're being attacked. And I don't know everything for sure, or a lot, but I do know that, you know, I feel like they feel, you know, they feel like they're being attacked because they're being told that everything they were taught that was right is not right. So if someone went to you and said everything you believe about so many things, and even where you are today, is not, it's all been, you know, it's all wrong, or it's all been an illusion, or it's all been whatever. Even if you've worked really hard, even if you, no matter where you came from, you know, everybody comes from different places.
Yep, yep.
You know, you might get upset about that and be like, wait a second, no, that's not right. That's not right. Not everything I believe is wrong. You're wrong for telling me I'm wrong. And instead of trying to see beyond that, they're in protective mode. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that that's what I think some of that comes from.
And I like the way you put that, because a lot of people have been saying, you know, the white race is being attacked, you know, this whole white privilege and so on and so forth, as if that what I work for, what I earn, I didn't earn it. And it was only purely because of the color of my skin, mm-hmm. you know. And I think some people believe that. And I think some people actually honestly feel as if this is what it is. And, you know, and I can sympathize with that, you know, because as a black person, you look at it from the other side, you know, mm-hmm. people are looking at you and you feel as if people are looking at you. Well, the only reason you got where you, you know, to where you are right now is because of either affirmative action or something to that extent. So mm-hmm. it feels as though we're both on a parallel path right now, right? Mm-hmm. Feeling the same kind of way, feeling attacked. Like, you can't say Black Lives Matter because you're not inclusive in, you know, and saying all lives matter, all white lives matter sure. as well. But, you know, I've always looked at it as, you know, in terms of if the most marginalized of a society gets more freedom, everybody else gets freedom. But I've never really looked at it from the point of, you know, white people, some white people, not every white person is being
definitely.
Persecuted in the sense of, no, you didn't earn what you earned because you got it because of your white privilege or some other, you know, the structural racism in the world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, you know, if someone comes from, you know, they have nothing and they work hard and they've built a life for themselves and they've got, you know, some basic stuff. They've got maybe an apartment or a house and they can support their kids, and they came from a place where they didn't know if they were going to eat at night, and you turn around and say you only got that, you know, or they feel like that's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to be like, what are you talking about? No, I worked really hard.
Exactly.
Not realizing that, yes, you totally worked hard. Nobody's saying you didn't work hard. Like, who's saying that? But it's not, the white privilege piece goes beyond that. You know, they're not thinking about the fact that maybe they were considered, not necessarily because they're white, but maybe it was two people, and there was a person of color, and there was him. And so just because they feel more comfortable, or her, I guess, they feel more comfortable, then that's why they went there. Maybe not even knowing why. I don't know. I don't know all the circumstances. I can't pretend to know them all.
No.
Right? But that's what I'm saying. Like, the difficulty with white privilege is that you grow up not knowing that you have it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, so then you grow up and then you learn about it and you're like, what is that? What are you talking about? Right?
What is this mythical thing that people think I have but I don't know I have, right?
Well, and how do you, right? One of the things that I've been listening to a lot has to do with, like, how do you ID that, right? If you're a white person, how do you ID that that's happening for you? And what do you even do about it? Like, so if I go for an interview and it's me and a person of color and they pick me, do I go, no, 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 I don't want the job?
But why would you? Why would anybody do that?
No,
you know? Like,
nobody would do
exactly,
that.
Exactly, exactly.
So I guess that's like, you know, but the other piece to that is, after you get the job, do you have your own recognition if it comes to you hiring somebody to, you know, make decisions based on just credentials and just who a person is and just, you know, I don't know. Or do you, I don't know what you, you know, I just don't know. And so I think that's part of it too, is navigating through all of it as a lay person to make sure that you're being conscious and that you're constantly looking at what you're doing and how you're affecting everybody.
But
is really hard.
I got to push back a little bit, but I don't think it has to be with you constantly have to sure. monitor yourself, right?
Sure.
Because you at some stage you gotta be, you know, you gotta be able to exist and just function without like worrying about the BS. And I think from my perspective, if you look at a situation and you inflame the situation by injecting something that shouldn't be injected into the situation, I think that's where things go left and is wrong. Because if you look at somebody and you're talking to them and you're having an interaction with them and you're just talking to them as a person, and you're not making decisions based on that person's race or gender, right? You're just making decision based on this, right? Now, I have this conversation with some people all the time about the fact that, well, you know, if you look at somebody, they're 110-pound female, and you know they gotta go do a job, they'd have to pick up something that's, you know, 800 pounds. You're like, no, I want the burly guy, right? That's what and to be honest, that's what comes to your mind, right?
Yeah.
Right? But
sure.
I think in that aspect, that's different, right? I wouldn't be a sexist comment to be like, okay, I need somebody that is bigger and stronger.
If it was a 110-pound guy, I'd feel the same way.
Exactly, right? Exactly. I would want to pick the person that is bigger and stronger because this is a brute strength type of thing.
Sure.
In a way. Or you could say, you know what? Maybe we want to have somebody that has the not the brute strength, but maybe a different way to look at the situation to make it better. So I think back in terms of race, from my perspective, is your decision that you're making going to affect this person based on race? Right?
Sure.
And I think that for me, that's it right there.
Yep.
So if we're walking down the street, or let me not even go to walking down the street, like the joke you made, the joke you made when you were 6 years old, you know, 5 years old, whatever it is, right? Your friend told you, right? If that joke was told today, would it affect somebody in a negative way? Right? Maybe, maybe not, you know? But that's that's the monitoring that you have to do, right? That's different than, you know, making another joke. I think that's how I would look at it. You know
sure.
what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I think it's not something that you have to constantly worry. It's like not you're like driving on the highway, you know, and you can't go to the right side or the left side. You just got to stay in the middle, you know, you're white knuckling going through the whole thing. And like, no, but I think we over, maybe not you, just in general, because everybody thinks that to be sensitive means to kind of lose yourself and not be able to make mistakes, you know?
Exactly. And I don't agree with that. I agree with more of what you're saying. I just think that trying to play like that, where I was coming from as far as, that's how I think a lot of people kind of feel about it sometimes. I actually think that for me, it's allowed me to have more open conversations with people, especially recent events, but just in general with all different people, because it's just something that continuously keeps coming up. It's in everybody's mind. It's in the forefront of their mind. And so those conversations are happening kind of just because a conversation is happening. And so someone's bringing something up, the video that they saw or something else that happened or whatever. So I think it's a good thing. You know, it's some of the things it's made me think about too is like, you know, so I have friends that are not white friends. I don't ever talk to them about race. Why? I don't ever actually really think about it when I'm hanging out with them. I don't ever think to say anything about like, you know, what do you think of all of this? Well, to be honest, I've been in COVID lockdown, so I haven't seen anybody. Okay. So to be fair, I haven't seen anybody. But even if I was seeing people, I don't know if it would even enter my mind. Like when I get together with them, I talk about work. I talk about kids. I talk about life. I talk about whatever. But it's not something that ever gets brought up, not on purpose. Should I ask about that? Like, should I ask them about what's going on? I mean, they live their own life. That's different than mine. And I don't know. Maybe I should. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe they don't want to talk about it. Maybe if they did, would they bring it up? So those are the things that like pop into my head. I don't think they're bad thoughts to have. I think they're just...
No.
I really question a lot of... Oh, like I said, it's been kind of playing in my mind and making me think about my relationships with people, I guess, that I have.
But do you think that paralyzes you at all? Like in the sense of, you know, the just analyzing everything and just like, should I do this? Should I do that? And does that make you not feel authentic when you're interacting with people?
So it's funny because it actually makes me wonder if I was being authentic before. Like if I was avoiding things because maybe they were uncomfortable, or maybe I thought I would make them uncomfortable, or maybe, I don't know, maybe subconsciously I just thought that it was forbidden to talk about. I have no idea.
Wow, okay.
So it makes me wonder if it would actually make me a better friend and more authentic as a person to just be able to say, you know, even to say, you know what, with all this stuff going on, I worry about you. Why is that hard to say? You know, or I've been thinking about you and all this stuff in the news and, you know, are you okay or any of that stuff? Like, that doesn't make me inauthentic. That makes me a friend who cares about somebody.
Yeah.
You know? So I kind of feel the opposite about it. I'm hoping it's going to make me a better person who's more open than a person who's, I don't want to say scared, but just was always taught that it was such a negative thing to even bring up.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't even acknowledge it, even though it's obvious.
No, I agree with you. It's really difficult because I haven't had so many people ask me about my well-being than I have in a month, you know?
Really?
Yeah, and it's, like, complete, not strangers, but people I went to high school with, people really? Went to college with, you know, Facebook is really interesting. And,
okay?
And, like, you know, I'm here for you. And I'm like, you weren't here. For, you know, like, I had this conversation with another friend of mine. And, you know, he's like, you weren't here for me 6 months ago. Now you are here for me now. Hmm. Like, did you forget the fact that I was black 6 months ago?
Hmm.
You know, and this stuff was happening to me.
Sure.
And then the conversation that made it a little bit more unique was the fact that he mentioned that he had told a couple of friends that, hey, listen, this is what's happening to me. You know, when I drive out here, when I come out here, when I do this, you know, and they're like, oh man, maybe it's because of this, maybe it's because of that, maybe it's because of this. And he was like, no, this is what's happening. No, and again, it is not, you know, the pure fact of the matter is like, stuff is happening to people. Whether we want to agree with it or disagree with it or feel attacked or not feel attacked and whatnot, I think both sides, white, black, in the middle, wherever, people are having emotions attached to this,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think for me, I'm not upset that somebody asked me how I am now because it affords me the opportunity to have this conversation. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I'd rather have this conversation now with people so they can get it and understand it, at least from my perspective, because I can't speak for every black man, you know? So
well exactly. This is just two people this isn't the whole world or anything.
But I think that's how it has to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's on an individual basis, you know?
Sure.
So when somebody says, you know, how are you doing? And I really answer them how I'm doing, they're like, oh,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Sure.
I'm like, well, you asked, you know, and now this is where we are.
Yeah.
You know, and I think as far as something you mentioned, and it's sticking with me, is the fact that people are feeling defensive and afraid and how to interact with each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, and feeling attacked. Without knowing that the attack is not coming on purpose,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm holding on to that because I think it's both ways,
oh, yeah.
you know, and my household is feeling that like crazy because we're a biracial household too, so it's really interesting, and you know, my workspace and all that stuff, but I think it's kind of cool like to actually feel that feeling of uncomfortable. I think people should be uncomfortable. Because this is difficult to talk about sometimes, and
mm-hmm.
some people have ideas and thoughts that don't jive with what people thought they were.
Yeah.
So when you see a tweet or a Facebook post or even hear somebody talk about something, you go, I never knew you felt that way.
Yeah.
And now I'm upset with you.
Well, I mean, so people stick with people too, right? Like, you know your group. And so if you're with a group of people who don't think the same way, you tend to not talk a certain way. I mean, I think the first time I ever even knew that something like that existed was in high school when a friend of mine started dating this guy that I didn't really know really well. But all of a sudden, she started using, like, racial slurs and words I'd never heard her say, and I was flabbergasted and really upset, and we got into a huge fight about it. Because I don't have a very quiet mouth when it comes to certain things, and I was just like, this is not you. Like, what are you doing? And that's when I learned that this whole group of people that I had no idea that they had, like, Confederate flags, and they had all this, these were not people I hung out with, and they didn't talk about it at school like that, you know? So these were people that it was like this little this closed off group of friends that were like this. And I just remember being astonished. It was like mind blown. Like, there are still people like that in the world. Oh my God. Like, that extreme.
And that was when you were in high school.
Yeah. And so, you know, as they get older, it even gets more extreme, of course, as we know, like, if their mentality stays that same way. But it's just, it was a really eye-opening thing that I knew people like that, and I didn't even know they were like that because I didn't.
You didn't talk about it.
I would never. Like, it's just not something that would ever come up, right? So I don't know. You know, there's a lot of little experiences, I think, in my life that have made me realize that I just don't know that much. So, you know, like, you know what I thought I knew, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And you can't learn it all from watching movies, and you can't learn it all from seeing it on TV or whatever. You know, some of it you just have to talk to people and hear real stories and real things that have happened. Or, like, the podcasts are great because it is people telling real stories about things that have happened to them or what they've experienced, or, you know, and that's pretty cool. So I've been listening to all these different things now that I think are not only interesting, but they make me think. And that's...
Well, okay, so Amy, you're a little different because you think a lot and you pose some interesting questions. So some people, and no disrespect to other people, it's just the fact that you've always had this opportunity to ask, you know, authentic questions, but also, like, see things from a different perspective that, you know, most people don't. And the questions that come out because you hear something or see something is completely unique. So you thinking about something and having a conversation with your son, who's mind-blowing, the stuff that he comes up with, is...
He's like me, like, times 10, so...
I mean, that's what I'm saying. So it's different. Yeah. It's a different dynamic, and this is why I wanted to have this conversation with you, because not only are you well-read, but you also have this ability, I think it's an uncanny ability, to just dissect things and go, okay, but what about this, you know? And I think that's incredibly awesome to bring to the table, and it's shaping my thought about, you know, things as well, because when you talk to different people and you get an understanding of how they feel about certain things, and if you're trying to be authentic and start thinking about some things, you know, it alters your thinking a little bit. So that way you're able to pose more questions, not only to yourself, but to other people, and get a better understanding of stuff. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to come off as if, you know, I'm standing on the pulpit speaking for all Black people, because I am not, you know, but I'm also looking at it from, you know, from a collective and saying, there are some things that are happening to not just Black people, white people, you know, and all the races in between, mm-hmm. that is not okay. Oh. But we need to kind of address those pieces as well. And learning and knowing that both sides are, you know, walking this parallel walk, mm-hmm. but afraid to take, you know, turn and face each other and be like, listen, are you feeling as weird as I'm feeling too? Like, we're in this together, so to speak, so we have to kind of walk the walk and talk the talk, mm-hmm. and be together. But we're so afraid to bridge that gap. Now it's like, so we're taking sides. Oh, the Black people are here, the white people are here, and, you know, mm-hmm. you know, Black Lives Matter. No, all lives matter, you know, like, you know, it's like this, sure. you know, well, tastes great, less filling, tastes, you know, yeah. like, come
no,
on.
No, I agree. So here's something that's funny, and I think about this quite a bit. Years ago, I don't even know how many years ago, honestly, it was you'd have to check my Facebook feeds. So Black Lives Matter was, and for my world, was fairly new. Mm. And I think I got more exposed to it through Facebook and stuff like that. But at the time, it was very, very new. And then I saw this post online, and it just said, All Lives Matter. And in my head, All Lives Matter just meant everybody mattered equally. There you go. So I posted it, not thinking anything twice about it, because really, I'm just naive, and I'm in my head, I'm like, everybody should love everybody, go. And that's just where my brain is.
And right? That's where it should be, right?
Right. But, so now, fast forward many years later, and understanding more why, you know, the chant is Black Lives Matter and not All Lives Matter. You know, talking about really, Nio, even, you know, using the analogy with the houses on fire on the street, right? Like, if your house is on fire, you don't go put water on all the other houses and let that one burn so that they don't burn. You put out the fire that's there. But, you know, that took years to figure that out. Not really probably because of limited exposure more than anything, but also because, like, it just didn't associate in my head. It just wasn't something that when I posted that, I thought anything negative. But you learn as you grow. You learn as you get older. At least I try to. And then you realize, you're like, oh, I get it now. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. I didn't get it. I thought I got it. Now I get it. And that just, it just takes time. I think like anything else, right? There's a learning curve. There's a change curve. It's something we learn about at my work, actually. They love to make changes. And there's the, but it's real. I was thinking about it in this sense too. So when you propose this change, we're changing everything in this department. We're change how it runs. We're gonna change how it works. Okay. When you first have it, there's tons of resistance. There's people saying it can't happen. There's people saying it's impossible. There's people saying the old ways are better, and everybody's fighting this change and having a million questions and like, and walking out of the room and like, we're frustrated. But then you start implementing the change. Okay. And then slowly people start going, oh, that's so bad. Okay. It's okay. And then at the end, there's the acceptance. You know, we're like right here and we've been there for a long time of this, like, the change is going to suck. Let's not do the change. And that's this, you know, this is the, you know, And that's, you know, mostly the white side, but it is that side, right? Who's fighting this huge, like, the change is going to suck. We don't need change. And then there's other people pulling them along. No, we need the change. But that's where we're at. And so it's going to take, I don't know. To be honest, I think about it, and I'm thinking in large terms, but I don't know if it's something you and I are going to see in our lifetimes.
I would 100% agree with that. And I think, and again, my perspective is that I think there are Black people that are also resisting the change in different ways, you know, and myself included, because when I speak to my kid, she's saying burn the whole damn thing down, restructure, you know, after the fact. Oh, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when I speak to other people, and I say, you know, other people are a little bit more militant than me. You know, they're like, you know, we want reparations. We need, you know, 40 acres and a mule, and you know, the whole discussion. But, and then I think I'm not in the middle. I'm not to the right. I'm somewhere, mm-hmm. right? Because I can't see certain things happening like that, you know, because then the resistance will be a lot more, and you will see a lot more inflammatory acts that happened in the future. That's how I look at it. Mm-hmm. Because you can't change something so drastically. Yes, it'll benefit a whole lot of people, but that drastic change will leave you with a group of people that is so resistant that want to chant something else. And then the group that is feeling like they're hurt will then resist into be a negative thing. So I think both sides I'm trying to emphasize something that's positive. So it can be slow, gradual, but not so slow, not so gradual that it becomes null and void. You know, like mm-hmm. 60s, you know, you don't want another, you know, 40, 50 years. No, you want it to be quick in the sense, but also in a fashion that people can kind of get behind, like you just mentioned. And I think that's how, in my view, it should work. But I, like I said, I speak to younger people that are in the 20s and 18 and whatnot, and they're like, no, burn it down. They're all, you know, all cops are racist. Sure. All school needs to be this and so on. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, I think when you speak to people that age, like my son, they, you know, he is all about, like, he's in the burn it down, you know, mode as far as many things. He will just go off about how everything is so corrupt. And you know what? He's not wrong. He's not wrong. There's tons of corruption. But his mentality is that we need to get in there, we need to rip down the corporations, we need to do this, we need to, like, these things that I'm just like, okay, okay, slow down. Like, I get what you're saying, but I also, you know, we've lived longer, and so we know that that's just not something that, honestly, will it help? Maybe. Will it hurt? Definitely. And will it create more hate later? Probably. Maybe not by a bigger group, I don't know. But I fear more like the small militant groups that are like out in the woods that are like shooting guns and like, you know, saying that we all need our Second Amendment and that we're all gonna like, you know, they're gonna blow up people. And that those are the people that I fear coming out of the woodwork if you start burning everything down. So yeah, I don't know. I think all of that change comes back to our kids though. Right? Like, it's almost like a circle, right? So the end of the circle is me trying to raise children who have more exposure than I did, who are, you know, able to accept people for who they are, love people for who they are, and, you know, acknowledge differences in people and celebrate them. That's what I hope to be able to do. It took me many years to even be conscious to anything because it was never around me, but it's more around them. And then hopefully they will raise children that will do even better. But we're talking years, you know? I wish it wasn't that way, and I could be wrong. I would love for in 5 years from now, we're all like, we all love each other now. I just don't know that that's...
I think that whole we all love you all, they're coming in your own bubble versus... the nation's, you know, standpoint, but
I
think that's where it should happen, you know. So if everybody cherished their own bubble, you know, and then that will lead on to concentric circles, that would be great. But I think it's harder, and you know, I've been reading this book, Derek Bell, Faces at the Bottom of the Well, and Marissa's been reading it too, and some of the theories in there are just ridiculously awesome.
Yeah.
One of them is his central tenet is the fact that racism is permanent in this culture, in this society, and it doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. And that what civil rights lawyers and all those civil rights activists have tried to do is just get symbols of freedom. Mm-hmm. And those symbols of freedom has come at a cost, because then legally... and in practice, they've been changing around. Like, it's extremely difficult to prove discrimination, even in 2020. You have to have crucial evidence to prove that somebody discriminated against you. You gotta have the
even
emails.
Then it might not matter.
Correct. Right?
No.
Right?
Like, that's the truth. Like, it may, even then, they're like, well.
Right?
Maybe.
So, you can. You know, people say it does walk like a duck, right? You know, you can have an entire company that don't hire women in any managerial position, period. 500, 600, 700 people in the company, and not one single female executive, if you want to look like that. Yeah. Nor a black one, right? So you have those kinds of stuff happening. And you're like, you mean you didn't hire one person that's in your company, and there's... Yeah. There's hundreds of females, and hundreds, but none of them can, you know, like break that seat. So you can't. It's so difficult to prove, and when you do prove it, you know, the benefits are little, right? And that company culture doesn't really change. It just sometimes they don't even fire the people. They just, you know, give some incentives here and there, and you know, so but the practice happens. So you have this law that says people cannot discriminate, but yet we know it's happening.
Yep.
So what exactly have we done? We put in a law, and that didn't change anything.
Well, it won't, right? I mean, the reason why it won't is because the law doesn't change people. It doesn't change their whatever belief they were raised with or whatever they were exposed to, that's not going to change that. Any law, whether it's against race or against, you know, sex or against anything, right? It's impossible. One of the things that I think is kind of funny is I read an article by a woman who basically said that her white friend asked, how do I know what white privilege is? And I read this whole article, and honestly, so many things of what she said I could have interchanged with just being a woman, like these things that were happening. And I was, because I've experienced them as a woman, and I'm like, it was kind of freaky, because, I've experienced them, and I mean, I know other people experience them, but they just, you know, it's like you're always seen in the room as the second class, right? You will always be this, like, I will always be there. The higher I go, the more and more I am the only woman in a room, in a meeting. More and more and more. And yes, I am outspoken, and yes, I have ideas and opinions, and I'm not saying nothing ever gets listened to. That's not true at all. But there are definitely moments where it's just like, just, you know, shut down. And that's, I've been in the workforce a long time, so it's been going on pretty much since the beginning. One of my first jobs was at Canobie Lake Park, and I ran rides. I loved that job. Oh my God, it was like totally fun, right? Total fun teenage job. It was great. So anyway, I worked one summer. I learned all the rides in my area, and one of the rides in my area was the train. At Canobie Lake Park, they have a train, and they teach two people every year to run the train. That is it. Boom. By an actual train conductor. It is a real train. And you have to take a test, and you have to pass it.
You mean the one that goes throughout the entire park?
Yeah, it's a real, real train. So I had to go in every morning. I had to prime up the whole thing. I had to get it going. I ran it all day. So I did this for, you know, the whole summer. Learned the toughest rides. It was awesome. Next year, I go off to college. I come back. Next year, I get over there, I start, and they say, oh, this guy, he's your boss. He's the area lead. I'm like, oh, okay. So you need to train him, because he doesn't know how to do anything, because he's never worked there. How? Why? What? I was flabbergasted. I was so upset. I said, I don't understand. So I pulled one of the managers aside, and I asked him straight out. I said, how is it that I have to train my new boss how to do his job? I don't understand how that happened.
Yep.
And he just said, honestly, I don't even know what to say to you. I don't know what to tell you. And that was it. He just had nothing. He had no reason for it.
He knew what was going on. He just didn't. He couldn't explain to you in that manner of like, we picked a guy over you.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody picked a guy over you, yeah. And this is how it's going to be.
Yep, and I was supposed to train. I was not happy at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't the first person that had happened to there. It was one of the biggest boys clubs I've ever worked in, and it was a boys club for sure. I mean, all the managers of all the area leads were men, and then when they finally made a woman who was like, honestly, I don't know, in her mid-20s, I don't know why she was still working there, it's a kid's job, but anyway, they made her a supervisor of an area. You know what area it was?
No. Nope.
The kitty area.
Well, there you go.
Because she's a woman, so, yeah. It was just, it was one of those moments in my life, one of the first moments in my life where I really felt that for the first time, and I was just... even to this day, so flabbergasted.
And how could you prove that they all, you know?
No.
So, you know, this is where this, you know, to come back to that circle of Derek Bell saying is there, you know, and we can try all we want, but it is what it is, and that's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, how you combat that whole process is, you know, some of his views are, again, radical. He's like,
sure.
Tax it. Right? Allow somebody to say only white people or only black people can stay in this hotel. and then they pay a tax.
Hmm. That's interesting.
And that's noted and known, you know? But, and then he's like, well, people are going to hate it because all those years of civil rights struggle just goes out the window. And then other people are going to be like, well, we don't want to be known at the only hotel that lets only black people in or right, only white people. And, you know, obviously his argument is a little bit more sophisticated than that. But how cool would it be to be like, you know what? Yeah, let's just do that. I just pay the 5% extra tax or whatever it may be.
Yeah, and I can stay
do whatever I want. You know what I'm saying? But, and that's where people are not comfortable to say those words and to say those things and be like, you know, we want it to be a boys club, right? We want it to be a whites only club, you know? You know, Augusta, the golf place, just, you know, recently, not too recently, but recently got integrated by women and by minorities. And, you know, not recently, but it's been a while. But it's that kind of cool situation to be like, you know what? This is, we're making progress. But then you look at it like, wow, that's not progress. You know, it's a snail's pace at best, right?
Yeah.
But, you know,
you let in like one person.
Tiger Woods, man.
We are integrated now. What?
But that's the only quota that you have to make, right?
Yeah.
You only have to allow one female in.
Yeah.
You meet it. You only have to allow one black person in. And, you know, and my only thing is, if we're educating people and, you know, kind of getting our circles to understand what's happening, that is what makes the situation better. And like I was telling the guys in the last episode, is that you have a platform. You can use your platform to not just educate people around you, but offer opportunities, like you mentioned as well. You know, if you're aware of it, you got that job over a minority person, fine. Maybe you're the person that hires a minority person that has the same qualification. And you go, you know what? This person will bring a different idea to the table because everybody here is white, or everybody here is black, or everybody here is male. You know, and I think that change makes it so much easier and better because the more ideas at the table, not all the time, but sometimes the more different ideas on the table, the better in a way, right? And I think you mentioned it again, that our children are going to be able to have a much better understanding of, you know, the things that we, you know, bumbling over right now than we will, right?
Well, they already do talk about it easier, you know, like I think for the most part, like, I'm not saying everybody, because people are a product of the environment they're raised in, right?
Definitely.
So whatever that is, but they do talk more openly about things, and it's not as big of a deal. And, you know, honestly, I think my son's biggest complaint isn't even about the people of his own generation so much. It's the older generations that he just doesn't understand, like, you know, my parents' generation. He struggles because he doesn't understand why they think the way they think. And I think maybe at that age, a lot of us think like that. But he, you know, hopefully will continue to grow and think and ponder things. And, you know, and hopefully my daughter will too. And I don't know. I mean, I just that's my hope. My hope is that I can instill in them what wasn't instilled in me, right?
And that's all you can do, right? You raise them and you send them out into the world and hope awesome things happen, right?
Good
luck, world, dealing with, you know.
Yeah.
So it happened. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't touch base on politics at all.
No.
And I don't.
That's another hour.
But I think maybe just, you know, and some people I've talked to and some people I've gotten some feedback from have mentioned that the division that is happening in the country currently is a byproduct of the election of Donald Trump. And some people are saying that no, it's not. It's a correction for the election of Barack Obama. And I like that aspect of it, that people are saying it's a correction, right? Like, think about that. A correction, right?
Yeah.
It's a correction. Not that it was just something that happened. It was a correction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's your take on that?
So I think that what's happening was already there, So maybe it's more amplified a little bit with Donald Trump because of his arrogance and how that inflames people. But I think it was already there. I think it's just more obvious now, and more people are coming out for or against whichever side you're on. I think that him being elected, if you look at history, we have a tendency in this country to go from extreme to extreme. And because one person gets elected, it infuriates the people who oppose that person. The next cycle comes, they all get out and vote, these people don't vote, and so on and so forth. And it just kind of like amplifies. And that was my initial impression when he first got elected. I mean, after I fell asleep during election night, and when I woke up, he was president, and I think I cried a little bit. I was not happy about that. But anyway, I was shocked, actually, is what it was. I was shocked because I just didn't think it would happen. But regardless, it happened, and here we are. So I also think that the fact that they're still going after Barack Obama, like, I see things all the time about, we're going to bring him in, and we're going to put him in trial. And I think that is the correction that they're trying to do as well, right? How dare you, kind of a thing. And so we're just going to keep going after you. I mean, they're still going after Hillary Clinton. She lost. How dare you get that close?
Well, that's another thing.
Yeah. And you don't have to like her, but I'm saying, it's if you look at both of them and the crate, like, I don't remember, and maybe I've just never paid attention, I don't know, but I don't remember, like, when George Bush, you know, when he left office and Barack Obama came in, I don't remember anybody trying to persecute him. Right? I don't remember anybody trying to persecute the person running for against the other person running for president. I don't remember that kind of stuff as far as like after the fact.
Mm.
And those things are still going on. And that's very strange to me. Why is that still happening? Why has that never happened before? And why is it happening now? Like, why are we still trying to put these people under our thumb to say, are you out of your mind? Like, what were you thinking to do that kind of thing? And that's just how I view it. Like, I'm just like, that's crazy. And the fact that people are still so hell-bent on, as you put it, correcting it, it's crazy.
No, it's a radical idea of, you know, systems correcting themselves, so to speak. It's like the Matrix got reloaded or something. But I look at it and as far as the election and everything goes, and I've told people this, I knew Donald Trump was going to win the election, period, way months before.
I was afraid of it. I was afraid of it.
No, it wasn't an afraid thing. It was just, I felt, you know, that was going to happen. It was that wave, that pendulum was going to swing back. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also because a lot of people didn't vote, you know?
Yeah.
And voting is a big thing. You know, everybody says vote and everything else, but it's like, you know, I'm going to butcher my daughter's comments here, but I think we talked about term limits and how important term limits are. You know, you have people working in Congress or wherever in government for 50-something years.
Professional politicians.
You know what I'm saying? And the constituency they had, and I think a buddy of mine mentioned this, that the constituency that put you in there are no longer there. And name recognition and the incumbent always kind of, you know, falls in. But also now the politics has gotten so monetized, you know, so much money is going into politics. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And whether you're a Republican, Democrat, and again, I wish there was more than just two parties in a sense, you know, mm-hmm. but there are other registered parties, but it's the two major parties.
Yeah.
But people forget that these people are politicians and they're funneling all the BS to us, you know, through this carefully algorithm funnel that certain people see and others don't, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming to us and we eat it up on a regular basis and we're forgetting that their job is to be there. And if we could just vote them out every 4 to 8 years, have some new blood, that would be kind of cool.
Term limits are important. And I also, you know, I'm struggling with the upcoming election. I want to vote, but I will tell you, I don't like either person at all. So I'm really struggling. This is a conversation I had with my son, actually, because I think they're both terrible choices. So how do I vote for what do I do? Like, this is an internal struggle I'm having with what do I do? Who
vote
do I...
in Camelot.
Camelot?
Yes. I think everybody should just write in the word Camelot.
Camelot. But that being said, you still vote for the local elections, right? Even if you decide not to vote for the presidential, you should still vote for the local because that is where the change is closest to home.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You end up having, you know, a terrible president, but you're all the men are, all the women would be great.
Well, the governors protect you against the president, right? So they're supposed to.
Do they?
They're supposed to.
Do they?
Well, it depends who your governor is.
There you go.
Anyway.
But, Amy?
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on Torchbearers. I absolutely enjoyed our conversation. Thank you.
No, it was great. Thank you for having me.
Awesome.
I wanted to say thank you for all those that have listened so far. Please continue to share. Please continue to leave comments if you haven't done so already. And follow on your podcast devices. Thank you.